Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. In the first half of our program today, we continue our candidate conversations. In today's installment, we're talking with Virginia's Libertarian gubernatorial candidate, Robert Sarvis. Later in the program, we'll talk about the headlines in the LGBT community, both locally and internationally. MSNBC anchor and former Wavy reporter Thomas Roberts, an openly gay man, is coming under some criticism for agreeing to co-host the Miss Universe pageant in Moscow. We'll talk with him about that. We'll also talk with Equality Virginia's executive director about the latest on marriage equality in Virginia. All that, along with your calls, after this news from NPR. I'm Kathy Lewis. It's great to be with you today. That little musical interlude was brought to you by Victor Bowen, who this very day, it has been announced, he has been permanently hired for his full-time audio position here at WHRV, and we are so happy about that. He has been our audio engineer for a long time, stepping into the very large shoes left by Perry Smith, and he has everything he needs for this job. He has enthusiasm and passion and dedication, and that's going to make him a great audio engineer. So congratulations, Victor Bowen. We're very glad to have you with us. It's 7 minutes past the hour. We're also glad to have with us today Robert Sarvis, who's the Libertarian candidate for governor of Virginia. This is part of our continuing candidate conversations here on Hearsay. And one of the things, you know, we have committed to for many, many, many years is that if a candidate makes it on the ballot, they make it into our studio. So Robert Sarvis, is very nice to see you today. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 if you have questions for Robert Sarvis, who will be the Libertarian candidate on the ballot. He graduated from Harvard with a math degree, earned a law degree from New York University, clerked for a judge on the Fifth Circuit, worked for a San Francisco tech startup, earned a master's degree in economics at George Mason, and ran for the state Senate back in 2011. He's from Northern Virginia. Is there anything else on your biographical sketch that you want to particularly point out to us?
Oh, well, I've also had a couple other professional experiences working as a lawyer in D.C. and also starting my own tech company doing mobile phone apps.
Really? So how do you, what do you bring to this opportunity? Why do you want to be the governor of the Commonwealth at this moment?
Well, I think it's really important that we have somebody, A, who studied both economics and law, but B, who has real-world experience, especially in the tech sector and entrepreneurship, and who understands the regulatory environment and all the ways in which we make it hard for businesses to compete on a level playing field.
How do you see that happening?
Well, there's a lot of ways. I can go through examples, but basically we allow special interests to use the regulatory process, which is supposed to be in the public interest. We allow them to capture it for private profit by coming up with regulations that essentially insulate themselves from competition, increase the costs of entry into the marketplace, and it just makes it very hard for small businesses and entrepreneurs and the innovators who are going to create the industries of tomorrow to enter into competition today.
One of the phrases that has been picked up and quoted quite widely that is yours, I want to get you to sort of unpack this a little bit for us, is open-minded and open for business. What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, I think Virginia should be a place that's open-minded and open for business. It should be a place that respects people's individual autonomy and both economic and personal liberty. I think we have to have an open society that welcomes people from all around the world, where it doesn't matter what your background is, what you look like, or anything like that. You're going to enjoy the equal protection of the laws and a broad liberty in your personal lives. I think that creates an environment in which we also have economic liberty, where we make sure the government is ensuring that we have open and competitive markets, where, as I said, the special interests aren't capturing our government, and that's going to create a flexible economy that will enable us to move people from declining industries into rising industries, get people back to work.
We're talking with Robert Sarvis, who is the Libertarian candidate for governor. You can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. As well, you can join us on our Facebook page, which is pretty easy to find. Just go over to Hearsay with Kathy Lewis. You can post your questions there as well. So I wonder if you would walk through for us what a Libertarian position would be on some of the key issues of the day, both economic and social, and give us a sense of where you are. Would you describe yourself as a strict libertarian, or where are you on some of those philosophical issues?
No, I'm a moderate libertarian. I strongly believe that people are able to live their lives without too much government interference, but I think there's certainly a role for government, and I think that that what we need is someone who's running to be a governor who governs from the middle, who is willing to work with both parties. And what the Libertarian Party is all about is taking the good policy options without the bad. You know, the Democrats and Republicans have some good ideas out there, but they also have a lot of bad ones. And a third-party governor can do a lot of good for the Commonwealth by working with both parties to get good economic policy, good personal liberty policies, good civil liberties, and the drug war is a seems like a simple issue that nobody's talking about in this race other than me. It's not just about drugs. Marijuana legalization. It's not just about marijuana. It's about so much more. There's the taxing and spending. We spend an inordinate amount of money on incarceration enforcement costs. We lose a lot of economic activity from people who are rendered unemployable. We ruin a lot of lives and livelihoods, force young men out of the household so that kids are growing up without fathers in the household. We've undermined civil liberties, militarized the police. And so that's an issue that we really need to be talking about.
So when you talk about ending, it sounds like you're suggesting an end to what we popularly call the war on drugs. What would that look like specifically? Legalizing marijuana, I'm guessing. What?
I think that's the step that we should focus on right now is legalizing marijuana, because that's the majority of the arrests in the drug war in Virginia. Most of those are for mere possession. We have a lot of young people who are losing voting rights and becoming unemployable because they have a felony that involves marijuana. So, and this is for something that has far fewer social ills than alcohol.
In a little later in our program today, we're going to be talking about issues in the LGBT community, particularly around the issue of gay marriage. And we are already aware that there are some bills we anticipate in the next session of the Virginia General Assembly around that issue. What's your stance on that?
Right, I'm in favor of treating same-sex couples equally. I think if the government is going to be in the business of granting legal privileges on the basis of a personal relationship, we should make those available to same-sex couples on an equal basis.
We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. We're talking with Robert Sarvis, the Libertarian candidate for governor in the Commonwealth of Virginia. You can also join us on Facebook as well with your questions for Mr. Sarvis. One of the key issues, and we've asked all the candidates about this, that is so important in this community, as you know, is transportation. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit tough to get from here to there. We have anticipate within a week or so a major ruling from the state Supreme Court on the constitutionality of the tolls that are proposed at the Midtown and Downtown tunnels. What's your take on that case? You're trained as an attorney. What's your take on that case and what the implications are for the Commonwealth in either with either decision in the case?
Right. Well, I think that there's a couple different issues. I'm not going to comment on the case itself. I'm going to wait to see what the court says. But I certainly think that we need to move to a regime where people are paying for the road usage. With the transportation bill, we kind of moved in the wrong direction, moving more towards the general sales tax for funding. That has a lot of problems in itself, where if you imagine a poor family in Hampton Roads may not even have a car, but they're paying a substantially higher sales tax and the surtax, geographic surtax on top of that. So a huge sales tax increase on them. It's a very regressive tax increase. It's not tied to road usage, so there's no economizing going on. So we do need to move more towards that kind of system. And then on top of that, you know, all the efficiencies that that creates, we also have the efficiencies from the centralization of spending control in Richmond. And, you know, the Tidewater area sees how the geographic subsidies can really undermine certain regions. But also it just means that there's a lot of lobbying that can go on in Richmond by developers and other concentrated interests. And the general public doesn't have that same opportunity.
So I want to get a sense of where you're in favor of tolls, and because it's a use issue. So if you use the roads, then you should pay a toll for
certainly.
That. Certainly. Where's that balance for you?
Well,
because
here,
you know, these public-private partnerships are really how we're funding a lot of this.
Right. Well, so part of the problem is that putting tolls on roads that where people feel like you know, they've already paid for them, and the tolls aren't merely they're revenue raising, not just for maintenance but for other projects, and that becomes a real problem when politicians simply see it as another revenue source. So when we move to user fees, we have to offset the taxes that we've been paying and make sure that, you know, we're actually not just using it to raise more and more money. We also shouldn't be granting monopoly privileges with very high rates of return when we don't otherwise have an open and competitive marketplace in roads. That's just a way of allowing particular companies.
If this case is upheld and the tolls are upheld, how would you deal with what the officials who have brought this suit suggest very strongly is an onerous burden, financial burden on people using those spans? Would you buy down those tolls? Would you let them stand? What would you do?
Well, I think what we have to do is make sure that we're not focusing on any one piece of infrastructure. We really need to move to a system-wide more efficient way of raising money and focusing on user fees. So it needs to be something that's for our entire network, not just one or two pieces of infrastructure. So, you know, I don't want to necessarily discuss that one issue. I don't think that was negotiated very wisely in the first place.
Pete's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Pete. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yeah, good morning to you and the candidate there. Wow. The comment he made about our young people with the drug laws getting felonies, becoming unemployable, becoming losing their voting rights, that really kind of hit home. I think it's a good idea, and I wonder if he would expand that. I have a family member who is all set to try to go in the service, and all because of an underage drinking violation, he was kept from going in the military. I mean, it's crazy. You know, kids grow up eventually. You know, you grow up, you experiment, do different things, and then you grow up and you stop doing it. I don't think drugs are really good for anybody, but there's no reason we should cripple somebody's future because they're young.
All right, Pete, thanks for the call. And, of course, we should make the distinctions. Pete was talking about his relative who had an underage drinking violation as opposed to a drug violation. But what about the issue that Pete raises with regard to drinking and drugs and the impact on young people's careers?
Right. Well, we are very punitive, and we've gotten to the point also in our school disciplinary policies, but we've gotten to the point where we don't allow young people to make mistakes, and that's really what Paul was talking about is just really sad. But you know, we have the highest drinking age of any of the countries in our sort of cohort, and you know, I'm certainly open to looking at that as well.
We're talking with Robert Sarvis, who would like to be the next governor of Virginia. He is a Libertarian candidate. We'd love to hear from you today. 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today with your questions for Mr. Sarvis. You know, it's interesting, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but we should note there has been a lot of discussion and conversation around your participation in debates, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons we're very glad to have you here with us today. You were sort of at that 9, 10, 11% threshold, depending on which poll you looked at. Were kept out of a debate over the weekend in Blacksburg, I guess, in the Roanoke area. I wonder what that whole process, what observations you have about that whole process and its impact on third party candidates.
Well, it's problematic. I talk about open and competitive markets a lot, and the most important market we have is the marketplace of ideas. And our political market is certainly closed off, and that's been done for self-interested reasons by the Republican and Democratic parties. And I don't think it's been really reported on well enough how it was basically orchestrated by the other campaigns to keep me out. And the goalposts kept moving, and eventually they settled on an average, which tied me to older polls, and it was done well before the actual debate. I mean, within 5 days of the decision, I had reached the threshold for the decision. They wouldn't go back on it, and it was very clear that the Cuccinelli camp was engineering to keep me out and wouldn't relent. So, you know, it's unfortunate, and the fact that the other two candidates can't really, you know, don't want me on stage with them is just testimony to the fact that this campaign is a threat to the status quo.
When one of the issues that's been very much a part of our awareness over the last year has to do with ethics reform, mm-hmm. in the Commonwealth, particularly these issues arose around a particular case involving Star Scientific, and I don't want to ask you specifically about that case, but what I do wonder about is what your stance is, whether you support reforming the ethics rules in Virginia, which are widely believed to be fairly lax in comparison with other states.
Yeah, I think it's worth you know, banning gifts and those kinds of ethics reforms. But I think it's important to go further and deeper, and that's to look at the ways in which we've made it so that government is the place that corporations go to get stuff. And that's really problematic. That's what creates the wasteful lobbying. That's what creates the conflicts of interest. That's what creates the taxpayer waste. And that's what creates the gift scandals. Because if the governor doesn't have a discretionary fund like the Opportunity Fund to shower money on private companies, if he's not expected to go around the state, the country shilling for particular companies, then fewer companies will be trying to influence his decisions through gifts.
One of the other aspects of that influence that many people believe has a real impact on the way Virginia operates, and many states operate for that matter, has to do with the way redistricting happens.
Yes.
Here in the Commonwealth. For many, many years, there have been government reformers who said that what needs to happen is it needs to be taken away from the General Assembly and given to an independent, nonpartisan commission. Of course, that would require changing the Constitution. So as governor, would you support a constitutional amendment to reform the way that Virginia does its redistricting?
Absolutely. I'm a strong believer in nonpartisan redistricting, and I think that it should actually be done by, or it can be done by, a computer algorithm. I don't really see why. I think it should be a fairly easy algorithm, fairly simple. All parties should be able to agree on certain principles of redistricting, and let the results fall where they may.
Matthew's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. I generally find myself leaning towards the libertarian end of the spectrum. Just a small concern for me, I'm also a pretty big environmentalist, and this kind of goes back to your open for business policy. And you mentioned a lot of laws in Virginia that kind of hinder small businesses and entrepreneurs and things. What is your stance on environmental laws that can sometimes hinder these businesses?
I think we've lost the call, but he wants to know about the relationship of environmental laws to being open for business, and that sometimes there is created a conflict there.
Right. I think that the most important thing in all areas, any sort of harms that you create, especially environmental harms, you pay liability for that. I think we should have strict and strong liability rules for environmental harms, whether it's polluting your neighbor's property or polluting the air or water. You know, if we try and put a price on those kinds of things so that gets factored into business decisions, then that's the most efficient and best way to mitigate environmental harms and sort of balance the costs and benefits of economic growth.
William is on the line from Matthews County. Hi, William. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. The reason I was considering voting for you was because you're not one of the other ones who I find problems with. However, when I went to your website, I picked up a small thing which said you were for the demilitarization of the police departments. I thought that was a rather small detail, and it seems to me a rather good way to organize police departments and fairly successful. Would you clarify that for a moment, please?
Sure, William. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, so this, the militarization of police is about the tactics that are used with respect to citizens in policing duties, and is kind of grows out of the drug war, where it's increasingly aggressive. So, for example, in Fairfax County, all warrants are served by a SWAT team, and this causes a lot of problems. In 2006, a guy named Sal Colosi was shot and killed during an arrest for nothing, and it was for nothing more than a small-time gambling charge. And this was not, I mean, the police department ended up having to pay a $2 million wrongful death suit, and that may be a more extreme case, but this extends everywhere, and we've seen it around the state with various, you know, the increasing use of military tactics, SWAT tactics, and it's bled to things like the ABC enforcement, where in Charlottesville, six plainclothed officers were very, very aggressive in approaching three young women who ultimately it turned out they had done nothing worse than buying sparkling water. So it's sort of a relationship of trust between citizens and law enforcement has been undermined.
William, thank you for the call from Matthews County today. We're 26 minutes past the hour. As you know, Virginia in recent years has certainly played a key role around the issues of the right of women to have an abortion. And I wonder if you could give us a sense of your stance on that particular issue. Some have concerns that increasing regulation on abortion clinics in terms of increasing their regulations to hospital standards are an attempt to reduce a woman's right to an abortion. I wonder what your general take on that is.
Right. Well, on the abortion issue more generally, I just think that it's we're in such disagreement that it doesn't make sense to me to try and use the coercive power of the state to sort of settle the matter once and for all. But, you know, so I'm not trying to move where the lines are drawn currently. But with regard to those regulations, I thought they were mistakes on rule of law grounds. I don't think that if the procedure is legal, I don't think that the government should be in the room with the patient and her doctor, you know, mandating the ultrasound. I also don't think that if abortion is legal, then you should try and do an end run around the direct law on the matter and try and misuse public health law to regulate the clinics out of existence. So I really don't see the. It just seems like there's a little bit too much of an intent to get to the result, regardless of how you, regardless of how it's done.
You can also post your questions, by the way, on our Facebook page as well. The other thing I wonder about has to do with what we have typically had either a Democratic or a Republican governor. What would we see out of a Libertarian governor with regard to the development of new economic opportunities and business? What would we see?
I think the most important thing that only a third-party governor can do is to get cronyism and corporatism out of government. As I said at the very beginning of this interview, I think that's the biggest source of problems in our economy and the poisonous relationship between big business and big government. I'm not saying that lobbying by big business is necessarily bad, but I am saying that there is a cozy relationship, and you see that in all the money that's going into the major party campaigns, and you see that in the tax and regulatory policies we get that close off markets, make it harder to enter and compete, and that's the biggest thing that we can get. And so it's only a third-party governor who can actually push back by saying no to both parties. And by getting, you know, if there's a Republican governor or a Democratic governor, the other party is going to resist and obstruct. Everybody wants to save their own supporters' subsidies and get rid of the other sides.
We have just a few minutes left, and I always try to go in favor of what questions listeners want to know about. So I got about 15 more, but we're going to get to Amy's question because she says she wants to know what the Virginian pilot meant last week when they said that if you got 10% of the vote, the Libertarian Party would get ballot access in state and local elections through 2021.
Right. I don't think it's through 2021, but it's certainly for several years it will have major party status under the law, which means we don't have to expend so many resources just to get on the ballot. We can actually use them. You can get on the ballot automatically.
It's sort of a threshold that says you're on automatically if you reach this amount.
And then we can use those resources to actually campaign. And so it also affects ballot order. The major parties are privileged above everybody else, and ballot order matters in the vote totals. And there are some other things like inclusion in debates. It just makes it more likely that an organization is going to say to invite the Libertarian Party?
We have just about 1 minute left, and your short answers are letting me get in one more question here,
okay.
So I hope that's all right. One of the things that we've talked a lot about in the Commonwealth has to do with standards of learning, the kinds of testing that our young people go through. And I wonder, as you look at educational attainment, and I think all of you agree that educational attainment is a wonderful thing, how would you get there? What would be the key features and differences from an education perspective in your candidacy?
Well, I think we have to undermine the extent to which our public school systems are run by politicians and bureaucrats for the benefit of politicians and bureaucrats. I think that there's reforms that we can make in the public schools, but also the best thing we can do is sort of short-circuit that feedback loop by really empowering parents and teachers by focusing on them, empowering parents by putting them in charge of the money that's being spent on their kids, allowing them to leave failing schools, fostering an open and competitive marketplace in educational services.
So charter schools, that sort of thing?
Well, charter schools are among the lesser liked of reforms, in my view. I think we should go for more direct funding of
so
people.
So parents would get a pile of money, and they could say you could go where you want.
Sure.
You think your child gets
sure,
the best
yeah.
shot. Robert Sarvis, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. And we'll note for our listeners that Robert Sarvis is your Libertarian candidate on the ballot for governor of Virginia. Thanks so much for spending the half hour with us.
Thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate it very much. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. Glad to have you back with us. It's 28 minutes before the hour, and you can join our conversation about LGBT issues, gay marriage, and everything about history as well, the history of the gay culture. We're talking about that today in our second half hour today, 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're glad to have James Parrish back in the studio with us today, the Executive Director of Equality Virginia. Good to see you today. Thank
Good
you
to
for
see
being
you.
Here.
Thank you.
So the New Jersey now becomes the 14th state in the country to recognize same-sex marriage. We understand that there are efforts that are going to be getting underway in the new General Assembly session to begin to take a run at that constitutional amendment. What's the status of all of that?
Yeah, so there'll be several delegates and senators who are looking to introduce repeal language in the General Assembly. Once that's passed, it has to be passed two times, the same language. So what will probably happen is it will get deferred till 2015 and be voted on in 15 and 16. It could be voted on this year as well, but it'll have to be voted on 16 because the state election has to separate the
I
two
see.
Votes.
Yeah. But you're convinced that process will begin with this General Assembly
yeah,
session?
Yeah, that process will begin, but with our current House of Delegates, it will be a push. And yeah. that's why we're also looking at the two lawsuits that have been filed, one in the Eastern District here in Norfolk and one in the Western District in Harrisonburg.
You know, I wonder about that because it's if you look at the fact that in the time It's an interesting thing to note the timing of the constitutional amendment, because it seems to me that just after that constitutional amendment was passed, you started this this process of states recognizing same-sex marriage. Now, of course, the number up to 14 with New Jersey, and with the governor opting out of requesting a further delay in that. To what degree do you think that movement has shaped where we are with regard to efforts in Virginia?
It definitely helps build the momentum. I mean, the momentum has been building nationwide, but also in the state when we see polls that the majority of Virginians now support the freedom to marry. Unfortunately, with our House of Delegates, a lawsuit is a quicker path to that success. Another thing that's part of the background and building the support for is no state has passed the freedom to marry without having non-discrimination protections for gay and lesbian and almost all cases transgender individuals as well, which is something we don't have in Virginia right now. So that's another piece on the advocacy side that EV works on, is protecting gay and lesbian and transgender bisexual people in the workplace, because none of those 14 states nor the District of Columbia have passed that freedom to marry before protecting people in the workplace.
25 minutes before the hour, 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. And we're wondering today where you are on this issue. We know there are any number of couples in who live in Virginia who've gone to other states to get married and come back to Virginia.
Right. I was just at a gay wedding in Washington, D.C. on Friday. So it's also a tremendous loss of business that the state is enduring, because there's hundreds and hundreds of couples going to D.C., Maryland, New York, especially post-DOMA. I mean, pre-DOMA, you know, you could be legally married even if you were in New York, a state that represented it. You had some rights and you had your marriage, but post-DOMA, you have Social Security, you have your veterans benefits, you have retirement, you have estate and tax planning. So that's really made it something people want and need, and so that's why they're taking advantage of it.
440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today, and you can also join us on Facebook as well. We're glad to have Thomas Roberts with us today. He is this is familiar territory for him. He was a reporter at Wavy many years ago before he went on to great fame and fortune on MSNBC. Thomas, good to talk with you again, and thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Kathy. You said many years ago. I'm so old.
You're just so successful and accomplished. That's what it is.
All right. I love the spin.
Well, it's good to have you with us today. I know that you're heading to Russia in just next month to co-host the Miss Universe pageant in Moscow. And as you know, and I think many of our listeners are aware as well, Russia has some fairly well-publicized anti-gay laws. And I wonder, as you think about going there, what motivates you to do that at this time as someone who is openly gay yourself? What are you hoping to accomplish with that trip and with this moment?
Well, so we travel there next week, and I say we because my husband's going with me, and also a segment producer here from the network. So the co-hosting duties for the actual competition, that's for November the 9th. Mel B. from the Spice Girls, who's also on America's Got Talent, she's the other co-host. So that's, it's going to be an amazing experience from that aspect. But I was most interested in going to this, Kathy, because of what's taking place in Russia. Because of the the propaganda laws, and also what they're doing with this adoption, the adoption law that went in restricting people from being able to adopt babies that are from countries where marriage equality is legal, and then also the issue that they have with that's going to be kicked down the line, but potentially taking away children from parents who identify as LGBT in Russia. So I wanted to go there so I could report on this. And so all of this is giving me a great drive to get there so that I can share this with our audience.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, professionally, I'm a journalist and I'm a reporter. Personally, I've been very upfront about who I am. I met my now husband when I was at Wavy. So that's when I came out to my coworkers, was when I was at Wavy. I didn't feel comfortable in coming out publicly at that time because I was still growing in my own comfort level. But, you know, I took everybody aside. Alveda Yule, Les Smith, The Works, Carrie Mattson, who's now Carrie Fury. I mean, I took everybody aside and I told them all personally because it was such a big deal to me. But I was in a committed relationship. And I was so proud of myself and who my partner was, who, again, you know, 13 years later, we're married. But so hopefully that's a – is that a long answer?
No, no, I very much appreciate it, because I think what happens sometimes when there are these societal issues about which we may or may not decide to take some stance, there's always this to boycott or not to boycott question. And I think it's really interesting to look at these as opportunities to look at the inside of systems and see, really explore and see what's behind this. And you really can't do that from outside, right? So, I mean, so if you say, well, I'm not going to do that, not going to go, I get that on a moral level, totally get that. But it really does then keep you from talking with people and exploring and, you know, and you know, seeing how people came to this conclusion and whether the introduction of other people from the outside makes a difference.
Well, it's true. I want to go and learn about what the catalyst was that brought this forward in such a, in many ways, progressive country of Russia, and also a dated country of Russia. So it's very interesting to go and see this on their own turf. Mm. I mean, I know what our turf is like. I know what our struggles for equality have been, not only having witnessed them as a reporter and debating them on air, but, you know, living through them personally. Mm. And so this experience to me is completely invaluable. Mm. And to be able to go and be a part of this from the aspect of, you know, basically eyewitness reporting and talking to people on the ground, I think it was really the part that sold me on wanting to go.
Well, it's been such a pleasure talking with you again. I want to say that we are so pleased with your success, and it's just been such a pleasure to watch you grow and evolve from your days at Wavy to your days at MSNBC. And it's lovely that you just got off the air and got on the air with us. So I thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to you again, and thanks for being with us.
No, Kathy, it's been great. And I love all my friends from Wavy and everybody that I mean, one of my best friends is someone who I met in Norfolk. You know, I started seeing my husband when I was living there. I carry all of those people with me. My old producer was just here to visit me at 30 Rock. Kelly Wilson Welsh, who I used to work with, she just came. So I love staying in touch with everybody, because that area really means a lot to me.
Well, best of success, and we'll talk soon. Take care now.
All right, Kathy.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. Thomas Roberts, who worked at Wavy years ago and left for MSNBC, as many great, talented people do from this market. Anita's on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Anita. You're on the air.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
I had a question about transgender and gender variant children,
yes,
and their parents.
I think you called a couple of weeks ago, maybe too.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I'm really concerned for them, because I don't know if Virginia has in its workings in the law or any existing laws that protect these children and protects their parents, because these parents are in a big quandary right now.
Sure.
The medical community has told them it's in the best interest of the children, or the child in this case, to support their gender identity. But yet, if they have to go to court to do this for name changes and so forth, mm-hmm, then they fear that the child will be taken away, because they know of someone, I believe it's in Charlottesville or Bedford,
right,
that had a child that was taken away from them because they...
And Anita, I remember your call, and I think the other piece of Anita's concern had to do with family members who were perhaps not on board with the parents' decision in this case. This is a complicated case, and yet not, because a lot of families face this. I wonder, James Parrish, what can you say to Anita about where the law is on these kinds of issues?
I'm not sure exactly where the law is, beyond judges looking at what they think the best interest of a child is. And I know there's no clear protection on like LGBT issues in that sense. I know there's a lot of great support out there for families, and it sounds like this family is trying to do the
absolutely.
Right thing.
They really could use some support, I suspect.
So to continue looking out there, we have a transgender coalition of a group of people that are trying to get those supports, but I would suggest they call our office and we will try to direct them in the best place possible. But that you know, there is these problems with LGBT families, even lesbian gay families. It's always not clear if you will have a friendly judge who doesn't think that your lifestyle, which we don't think it's a lifestyle, is in the best interest of a child.
So Equality Virginia's website, in case you're still listening, is equalityvirginia.org. This was an organization that was founded in 1989. They have some terrific resources and certainly can connect you and this family or any family who's facing these kinds of issues with some support opportunities in the community. What is it they say? Information is power, I suppose. So equalityvirginia.org. They also have some great information about what is next for Virginia after the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and also working with an organization called Freedom to Marry to recognize Virginia mayors who are in favor of marriage equality. 15 minutes before the hour. Judy is on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy. I kind of have a two-part thing. My partner of 31 years and I just got married last month in Delaware.
I remember your call, too. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the deal. We are planning on leaving. And I can't wait anymore. I don't want to wait anymore. My problem is that Virginia runs the risk of losing educated, motivated, professional people over their reticence to, join up with what seems to be a growing movement. And I don't think through the legislature anything will happen. I think it will have to be through the courts. And I just think it's really sad. I don't want to leave. I was born and raised in the Commonwealth, but I'm going to leave.
And Judy, forgive the question because I want to give you an opportunity to flesh this out a little bit. When you say you're going to leave, what is it that you are going away from and what is it that you are going to?
I'm going to a state that seems to want to welcome me with open arms, that allowed my union, that supports me both, I think, professionally and tax-wise. It certainly, helps me out. We get to file, of course, federally jointly, but here again in the state of Virginia, we file separately. And there are so many things. If one of us went to the hospital, would our marriage be recognized? Would my right to be in the room be recognized? No. If someone chose to pitch a fit, they could.
Judy, thank you for the call. And I know you hear this quite a lot, James Parrish, what Judy's talking about. And you just mentioned there are people moving out of the Commonwealth because of this issue.
Because of this issue, and also beyond marriage is second parent adoption. We have a lot of lesbian and gay families raising children where they're not both allowed to be the legal parent in the state. You either have to adopt jointly out of state, but if you adopt in the state or you marry someone who already has children, if you're of the same sex, you cannot currently co-adopt their children. It's not allowed in Virginia. It does recognize adoptions from other states. But she's right, and we think that's it's a little unfair and sad. And when I'm traveling the country, the one thing I will say is Virginia's not behind on this issue. The majority of Virginians support the freedom to marry. The majority of Virginia's leading employers support LGBT people in the workplace. It's our House of Delegates that's behind the times. That's those 100 people in the House of Delegates are the people that are holding up freedom to marry, second parent adoption, non-discrimination protections for LGBT people. And thankfully, we have an election next week, so everyone should look and see where the candidates stand on these issues.
And this is something that's changing pretty significantly when you look at just year over year. May 2011, among registered voters, the question was posed, do you think it should be legal or illegal for gay couples to marry? In May 2011, 46% thought it should be, and this is Virginians, thought it should be legal. Now it's 56. That's a 10% jump in less than 2 years. All of this plays into the conversation today. We're glad to have Dr. Charles Ford with us today, professor and chair of history at Norfolk State. He is also a volunteer advisory board member with ODU's Gay Cultural Studies program. He conducted a lecture back in the spring called The Making of the LGBT Hampton Roads History, a picture book in progress. Nice to have you back with us
today. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So it's interesting. I'm thinking about that conversation with Thomas earlier, mm-hmm. where he talked about in 2001, he came out, but he told his coworkers separately. You know, he was very, it's interesting how he didn't feel comfortable about doing that. As you look at that history, it seems in the most recent history, there's this sort of explosive growth in support for gay marriage. And I wonder what you make of that.
Well, that explosive support, though, can eclipse.
I mean, explosive meaning right. 10% in 2 years is significant.
But that can eclipse, though, the very long history of LGBT peoples in Hampton Roads. That's what I found with my research, that it extends back into the colonial era and into the federal era all the way through the 19th century.
So these issues were present in the community conversation back then?
The issues weren't present, but the people were present.
Yes.
And their issues were largely come out in the arrest records of sodomy.
Interesting.
And appear in those kinds of public records that we'd like to digitize as part of the endowment campaign at Old Dominion. We also have the whole run at Old Dominion of the our own community press, and we'd like to put that up on the web as part of this campaign to raise money for those kinds of initiatives to bring this history. And one of the things, interesting things that I found, surprising things, is that Norfolk, in this late 20th century, early 21st century activism, actually was the fountainhead of Virginia activism, not Northern Virginia.
Hmm, really?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, coming out of the Unitarian Church and our own press, that was really the vehicle for a lot of statewide activism. Really, the first statewide organization that I can account for was
really?
In 1978. Not the usual 1989 Virginians for Justice, but there were forerunners. And what I've also found is that the AIDS epidemic and the military changes, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, were particularly harsh on this area, and that's particularly harsh on the leadership of LGBT peoples in this area. And that's why we seem backward, not frontward, because that took out the air, if you, so to speak, of the activism from the late 70s and early 80s.
We're at 9 minutes before the hour. It's 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're talking about the history and the present of LGBT initiatives in Hampton Roads and in the Commonwealth of Virginia as well. They have been looking at this history as part of ODU's Gay Cultural Studies program.
And I'd like to say that this project came out of actually Equality Virginia's Legends Gala last year. We did a timeline of all the events and peoples around the ballroom of the Plaza Hotel. It was quite astounding. People loved it, and that's why this project has become on my agenda. I have so many other projects going, but this priority.
This one has your attention and your focus. I got it.
Yeah.
We're also talking with James Parrish, who's the executive director of Equality Virginia. You know, I'm wondering about this, James Parrish. This timeline is so interesting and how it sort of seems to be compressed in recent years. And there are a number of cultural cues as well. You know, we see gay couples presented now on television and in movies and the like. That has to be assistive in the work that you're doing.
Yeah, changing hearts and minds. I mean, more people statistically, if they know someone who's gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, are more likely to support LGBT people. And, you know, so that is part of this, what you call explosive growth in the past couple of years in support is it's the people that Charles is talking about that have spent the years and years building the comfort levels for people to be able to come out. And the more people that come out, the more people support the LGBT community.
We're at 8 minutes before the hour, and there's a big event coming up called Legends. This is the 2013 Legends event. It's going to be Saturday, November 9th, and it's the 8th annual Legends Gala at the Norfolk Plaza Hotel. One individual and one organization is being honored, WHRO being honored as the organization.
Yes.
And Miles Bircher being honored as the individual. Miles Bircher served as the president of the Out and About newspaper, and so that was this, Charles, that was an early on
exactly that
player in this whole thing.
Newspaper ran from 1976 to 1998.
That's amazing. And
yeah.
And I think Miles Bircher's with us now. Good to talk with you, Mr. Bircher. Thank you so much for being with us today, and congratulations on your upcoming award.
Well, thank you very much.
And I know that you are probably one of the first couples in this area to marry, and you and your husband have really never hidden that. When did you get married, and what was that experience like in the very beginning to be so open so early on?
Back on October 13th actually was our 20th anniversary as far as being together. We've been married just over 8.5 years. And for myself, it has never really been an issue to the point I am Miles Bercher. This mm-hmm. is what I do for a living. This is everything. And, oh, by the way, I happen to be gay. Just really on educating people, those that stood against you, I have found over time, don't know you. And just educating them that you are a person. You do volunteer work. You're involved with these organizations like Jared March Dimes, Walkathons, you know, all these different things help to educate people that, hey, the only difference, we'll never see.
And congratulations on your award, by the way. And I always think that's so interesting, and we've often talked about that on this broadcast. It's very hard to sort of put people in your own constrictive shaping, the shaping of your own mind, once you do get into relationship with people and they get to experience you, you know, in a different way. And you certainly have had any number of charitable initiatives you have undertaken throughout the years, some of them related to the LGBT community and many of them not. And I wonder from a corporate perspective what that experience has been like for you as a business person in Hampton Roads.
Business person has been absolutely wonderful. The people that just the different avenues I've done and involved everywhere has helped me grow as a person, but more so the connections, the friends, and giving to the community rather than taking. It's giving back. The more you give back, the more you get. And that's where a lot of people don't quite understand, you know, the community involvement. Oh, that takes so much time. Yeah, it does, but you end up getting back so many connections, lifelong connections. Mm-hmm. Friends and the personal relationship.
Sure. And then just feeling like you've made a difference. And I don't think there's any doubt that you have done that. Thank you so much for being with us, Miles Bercher, and congratulations again on receiving the 2013 Legends Award from Equality Virginia. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You bet. We're at 4 minutes before the hour. You know, it occurs to me, Charles, as I'm thinking about what Miles is talking about, and here's somebody who has been actively and openly engaged for a very long time. As you think about the climate here in Hampton Roads, how would you assess the climate here compared with other communities? And are you, I don't want to say satisfied, but along a continuum, is this a good place to be at this moment? Do you feel like you're further ahead or further behind than where you thought you would be at this
moment? I
think
there's been a renaissance, actually, in LGBT activism since about 2007, when you have the creation of such things as the Hampton Roads Business Outreach Harbor and other organizations. Also, Hampton Roads Pride is now front and center downtown rather than hidden away somewhere else. So really, we have a renaissance, a rebirth from the 1970s. Where there was an openness in the late 70s in Norfolk, as opposed to Northern Virginia or other places in Virginia. And that went away because of the AIDS crisis and because of the military changes that were bad for LGBT peoples. And so it's taken us a while to get back to where we were as a progressive place, I think, as a place that can take us into the new century.
Well, it's great to have you with us today, and back with us today, I should say, Charles Ford. Thank you for joining us and for the work that you're doing to document this history. James Parrish, thank you for being with us from Equality Virginia. And again, Equality Virginia's big event is the 8th Annual Legends Gala. It'll be at the Norfolk Plaza Hotel on Saturday, November 9th. And for more details, you can log on to the website, equalityvirginia.org. They'll have that for you, along with many other items there as well, particularly from from a supporting perspective. So I hope that you will check that out. The eventual finale for the Miss Universe pageant, where Thomas Roberts will be featured, is November 9th. And so lots of opportunities coming up for you here in the next couple of weeks. Thanks so very much for being with us today. Congratulations, Victor Bowen, VICTORY. We are proud of you, my friend. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.